y'all. We have a little bit of a treat for you this week.
Yep.
We know, Kyle and I know, how much everyone loves true crime these days, and because we do, especially when it comes to podcasts, and you start hearing about it, and it's, I'm drawn in.
Yeah, I am too.
And our friends over at Wondery have a brand new podcast. Wondery and the Los Angeles Times have got together and have made this podcast called Detective Trap. What it does is it takes you into the life of not just a police officer, but a relentless female officer. And it's hosted by Dirty John's award-winning journalist, Chris Gofford.
That's right. When these three women disappear in Santa Ana, California, without a trace, this bold young detective, Julissa Trapp, she's on the case, man. She's always wanted to be a cop, and she's a good one.
100%. Not only that, she gets, I guess you could say, immersed or drawn in deeply into finding the person responsible for these murders of these missing women. And of course, it'll be shocking to some of you, but she is driven, like every good officer is, to bring not just justice, but to bring these families that are involved some peace, right? Something that would help them. So we're talking about going undercover. She does. Look, there's a lot of stuff we could get into. I think you're really, truly going to enjoy it. Like I said, first of all, when you get into undercover work, that's crazy enough as it is.
Yeah, it's got to be scary, right?
Yeah.
You watch, what's the one with Johnny Depp where he goes deep undercover?
Yeah, well, any of it.
Johnny, what was the name of that?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
You know, with the Fugazi and all that.
Yes.
What's the name of that? Donnie Brasco.
Yes,
yeah, I can think of it.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine being confronted? You got to go deep undercover where, you know.
As if being an officer is not hard enough.
Yeah, they'll kill you.
Yeah. Now you're undercover. And she's undercover, folks, as a sex worker trying to find who took these women. And she does come in contact with a certain person who, it's even been quoted saying, takes a little of her soul.
Yeah.
So, well, yeah.
Yeah, we've arranged a sneak preview for you of Detective Trap. So make sure while you're listening to subscribe to Detective Trap on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. You can also find the link in the show notes. Let's listen.
One morning in April 2014, Julissa Trapp woke before sunrise and went to her closet.
I know I probably went through at least three or four shirts. Just staring at, like, trying to decide what to wear.
She would have to make 1,000 calculations that day. Some of her choices would be right out of the homicide investigation manual. Some of them would be influenced by the small army of other cops who watched her work. Some would be instinctive and hard to fully explain.
I remember thinking to myself, this is just like any other interview. Don't let it get into your head.
Of course, it wasn't just any interview. Soon she would walk into a windowless 8x10 room and sit face to face with a man she had been hunting for the last month. To walk into an interrogation room was to play a character, she liked to say. And that began with the right costume.
It was a strategy and advice I got from an FBI agent when I worked sex crimes, that pink is a soft color, it's very approachable, non-threatening, and so that was something that I traditionally wore. I reached for those first, and it just didn't feel right.
At the Anaheim Police Department, where she worked, Trapp was known as a master interrogator. That depended on finding exactly the right persona for the room. Would she be a mother? A sister? A friend willing to listen?
I think part of it was there was people that told me, like, do you think he's even going to want to talk to you? Like, do you think he hates women?
One woman was dead. Three others had vanished. Today might be the last chance to get answers about their fate. If the missing women were alive, the man in the interrogation room might reveal where they were. If they were dead, as she suspected, the man might be talked, maybe tricked, into revealing how she could bring the bodies home. Julissa Trapp had missing persons of her own, and she carried them on her skin, so they confronted her when she stood in the mirror, as she did now. They were represented by four black birds tattooed in a straight line under her collarbone. They were swallows, the bird that carries souls. She thought of each one as a kind of scar, but also a reminder of the mystery of fate that had brought her here, to this particular morning, and this particular case. For this adversary, she thought it was important to look approachable, but also to project strength.
I'm sitting here trying to decide, like, what do you wear when you're interviewing a serial killer?
She picked an emerald green blouse.
I wanted a color that looked good on me, but also that kind of signified a little bit of power. Emerald green just kind of seemed to hit it. I wanted him to know he was in control of that room.
Detective Trapp put it on, over the swallows, and grabbed her badge. From the Los Angeles Times and Wondery, I'm Christopher Gofford, and this is Detective Trapp.
Randy, you're not now. This game's mine to lose. So follow me lightly to the deep dark woods.
This is Episode 1, All the Missing. Anaheim Police Department headquarters is in a red brick building that cops call the barn. It's been a second home for Julissa Trapp for most of her life. She now works at a cubicle on the second floor, where she's the only woman on the 8-person homicide unit, or what she calls the varsity squad. The case that would consume her for years, the case that this story is about, began a few miles away in Santa Ana, the densely packed county seat. Women began disappearing from the streets there in the fall of 2013. Trapp would come to know their life stories intimately, and their faces would stare at her from the corkboard beside her cubicle. But initially, the case belonged to the police department in Santa Ana, where the missing persons unit had just one full-time investigator, a civilian, handling nearly 100 missing persons reports a month. The first to vanish was Kiana Jackson, who had just celebrated her 20th birthday. She had grown up in Northern California's logging country and left home in her late teens. She had been living in Las Vegas and had fallen into the grip of a man her mother came to believe was a pimp.
It wasn't like she got out of high school and said, or as she was growing up, said, well, this is what I want to be. I want to go be this.
Kiana Jackson's mother, Kathy Menzies, raised her in a small timber town with one high school and a railroad museum.
She got thrown into a big city and got swiped up because somebody saw her vulnerabilities.
Menzies says they kept in close touch, talking or texting every day.
She saw something funny and took a picture of it and sent it to me, or she heard this funny joke and wanted to share it with me, or, you know, I mean, during the day it was, oh, I'm going to make dinner tonight. How do I make this?
In the first week of October 2013, Kiana Jackson took a Greyhound bus to Santa Ana. When her mother didn't hear from her for a few days, she reported her missing to the Santa Ana Police Department. The person she talked to had looked up Kiana's rap sheet and found she had a record for prostitution.
And I thought, okay, well then, okay, but that still doesn't mean she's an invalid person. She's a human being just like anyone else. She has a right to be looked for. He just said, he goes, just so you know, prostitutes work circuits. From what I understand now is what he was meaning was, you know, they move from town to town. And I said, well, what you don't understand is, okay, maybe she was working circuits at the time she was talking to me all the time, but she talks to me daily. I see something from her daily, whether it's a voice, hear her voice, see a text message, something.
She called Orange County hospitals. She called the morgue. No trace of Kiana. She called the Motel 6 where she'd been staying. Kiana had left her things in her room and not returned. Weeks passed, and the mother's panic and desperation grew. At the Santa Ana PD, it was not considered a high-priority case. It would be months before police got a warrant for Kiana's cell phone records to determine where it was last pinging. In the meantime, 18 days after Kiana Jackson went missing, a second woman disappeared. That was just a preview of Detective Trapp. To hear the rest of the episode, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening now.